This was shocking to me. Yesterday was a benchmark in embarrassment, stupidity, and unrelenting, scary stuff. So-called President Trump decided to have a last-minute press conference in the White House. All the press showed up, at which time so-called President Trump took the opportunity to do the following: to talk about his election as if he was still in it, defending his campaign, spending a huge amount of time talking about what Hillary Clinton did during the campaign. Attacking the press by saying all they do is disseminate fake news, attacking the Justice Department, attacking Congress, attacking the FBI, CIA, and the entire intelligence community and all the agencies thereof. An angry, vindictive, out-of-control child who must have his way 24/7, living in the delusional world, thinking that everybody put him into the White House when his approval rating now is 39%. He's unbalanced. He's out of control. It was a display, like watching your child lie on the floor, kick their feet, and have a tantrum. It was no different. NBC reporter Peter Alexander stood up to ask a question of Trump, because during the press conference, so-called President Trump, again talking about his election, why he's doing that now, I have no idea. Nobody knows why he's defending his election still. He says that he won by the largest number of electoral votes since Ronald Reagan. NBC Peter Alexander knew better. He stood up and he says, "Excuse me, Mr. President, you just claimed that you had the largest number of electoral votes since Reagan. That's not true. Obama had tons more than you." And then Trump interrupts the reporter and says, "Well, I was talking about Republicans." And the NBC reporter continues and says, "That also includes President Bush, who had far more electoral votes than you." And then Trump responds, knowing that they didn't buy his bullshit. Trump responds by saying, "Well, that's what they told me. They told me that. So I'm telling you that as fact, because they told me that. And besides, that's what I've heard around." The reporter says, "Well, how can the American public trust you? How can you call the media producers of fake news when you just stood up there right now and spurted out fake numbers that you know are fake? And the only thing you know about is that somebody told you this stuff." Congratulations, sir, Peter Alexander, NBC News, for calling him out on it right away. This stuff cannot continue to occur. Here's the actual exchange that took place during the press conference.
"You have the biggest electoral margin since Ronald Reagan with 304 or 306 electoral votes. In fact, President Obama got 365 in 2008.
Well, I'm talking about Republican.
President Obama, 332, and George H.W. Bush, 426 when he won as president. So why should Americans trust
you when you're misrepresenting information? We had a very, very big margin.
The question is, why should Americans trust you when you accuse the information they receive of being fake when you're providing information that's
accurate? I was given that information. I've seen that information around. But it was a very substantial victory. Do you agree with that?"
"You're the president."
Okay, thank you. That's a good answer. Yes.
Bottom line, you're the president. Why don't you act like it? Oh my God.
Please be quiet. 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 Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah. Did you hear those little girls, Donald? Maybe you can understand it from somebody who's your own age.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh, they've gotten a bit weird, all right.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. I'm Ron Van Dam. I do this every single weekday. Unless it's snowing, then we're on a one-day delay, just like your garbage pickup. To be petty, like my president, I had been complaining. It snowed here over the weekend, past weekend, and they didn't pick up my trash. And for some reason, this really bothered me. It consumed me, the fact that they didn't pick up my trash, because I called and they said that they wouldn't pick it up till the next day because of the snow. So I didn't put my trash out. And then I looked out the window and there was a trash truck and my trash wasn't out because they told me not to put it out until the next day. So I called up the rubbish people and I complained heavily because for some reason I felt like I was being abused, like I was being taken advantage of. I was being manipulated. I was being maligned. But it was just about the trash pickup. Then I started to understand what Trump goes through. It's like he's pissed because they missed the trash pickup. It's the same level of stupidity. But all I can say is, I'm not the president. He is. So the burden on me is considerably less. The bar should be a lot lower for me than it should be for the guy sitting in the White House, supposedly running the country and influencing supposedly the entire globe. Bars differently placed in that situation. So the trash people on Monday said, I'll send a truck back on Monday afternoon, pick up your trash, Van Dam. Thank you very much. I woke up Tuesday morning, the trash was still there. I called them up. I said, look, yesterday you told me you were going to pick it up, yes, and you didn't pick it up. Then you told me you were going to send it a little later, and they never picked up later. She says, okay, Mr. Van Dam, take it easy, please. We have a truck dispatched today to go pick up your stupid garbage. I said, stupid garbage? Fine. Maybe your garbage is stupid. Not my garbage. My garbage is very important to me. I spent a lot of time recycling. I want it picked up. If I, Mr. Van Damme, it's Tuesday. We have a truck out on the way for you. Say thank you very much. It's Tuesday now, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. My trash still hasn't been picked up. I call him up again. I said, this is my third call here. You told me the trash is going to be picked up. It's 4 o'clock. It's getting too late, isn't it? He says, no, Mr. Van Damme, we pick up trash until the day is done. You're still dispatched for today. They should be by soon, if not very early this evening. So, okay, fine. I wake up Wednesday morning. Trash is still there again. Now I'm really, really upset. I call them up again and I say, hey, come on here, man. You've lied to me. You're giving me fake news. You're giving me fake information. Says, I apologize for this. We've talked to dispatch. You're on the pickup list for today, Wednesday. I said, no, wait, this is what you've told me four times already. At least be honest and say, we screwed up. I'm coming over with my car to pick up your trash personally. Something like that. Says, Mr. Van Damme, your trash will be picked up today, Wednesday. And please, if you're on medication, please take it because you're out of control. No, I've been lied to four times. You're a big company. Your only job is to pick up trash. You're not in the textile business. You don't grow fruit. Your only purpose is to pick up trash. And as I've said, the name of the company, and I'll say it because this is true, it's Waste Management. And I didn't say it to them because I don't know where they're at and they know where I'm at. But I wanted to say, hey, the name of your company is Waste Management. You're not even managing your waste. It's all you do. Stick to the waste management. Manage the waste. Manage the trucks to pick up the waste. Mr. Van Damme, they'll be by today, Wednesday. Okay, fine. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the truck comes by and picks it up. And I feel a little bit foolish because I made such a big deal about it. But then again, I don't. Again, I should be focusing on other things, just like the president should be focusing on other things. So I guess I'm no better than he is, but I'm not the president. And I am better anyway. Last night, I'm lying in bed. It's 9 o'clock at night. I was tired. Excuse me. But I get up very early in the... Excuse me. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning every weekday to do this crap for you. And for me, because I make money at it. It's my job. I get up at 4 o'clock. I pee. I brush my teeth. I shower. I eat some breakfast. And I go to the studio. And I do this thing here. My mind is supposed to be really refreshed and really running rampant with incredibly humorous things to say and poignant things to point out. So I get tired, okay? So around 9 o'clock, I get tired. Get off my back, okay? So I'm lying in bed, and I charge my cell phone on my nightstand next to my bed. That's so I can get bombarded by all the radio signals and so I can very easily have brain cancer by, you know, lying next to my cell phone while it's charging at night. I actually met a couple of women who have the same thing in common. They don't have pockets in their pants. I don't know why women's pants don't have pockets. But the don't. I think it's because a woman doesn't want to put anything bulgy near her hips or around her crotch area. Because every woman feels like they're bulgy enough down there. No way I'm even slipping a piece of paper in a pocket, so don't even make the pockets. Ain't going to happen. These women take their cell phones and they stuff them in their bra. And I stare at them. I'm not staring at their breasts. I'm staring at the cell phone in their breasts. I feel like saying, do you understand what's going on here? You're actually purposely cultivating cancer in your breast here because you're putting an electronic device that's constantly uploading and downloading signals. And I mean, maybe it's invisible, but there's shit going on there, honey. It's not the healthiest thing for you to do. I mean, why don't you just take your cell phone and shove it up between your legs or something? And that's disgusting that I even said that, but what's the difference really at that point? So I sleep with the cell phone on my nightstand. This is getting disgusting, isn't it? I apologize. First of all, I apologize to you for going where no man should go. And I mean that in both senses. So the cell phone is there. It's 9 o'clock at night. I'm lying in bed. I'm trying to go to sleep. Cell phone's charging. All of a sudden the phone rings. It's 9 o'clock. My immediate response when I've just started to fall asleep, when the phone rings that late, and 9 o'clock is late for a phone to ring, something's wrong. Somebody's in trouble. Do I have to change into my Superman or Batman outfit immediately? What's going on? Do I need to spring into action in order to save someone again? What is it? A phone call at 9 o'clock means trouble. There's no two ways about it. Someone's in trouble. Someone is deathly ill. Someone has been in an accident. There is an incredible problem. Somebody is in peril. Tied to a train tracks, perhaps. Something hanging off of a 100-story building by someone's knuckles. I must save them. What is this call at 9 o'clock at night? I pick up the cell phone. I put it to my head so I can hear who's on it. And I say, hello, in a frantic, frantic hello. And the person on the other end, in a very thick Indian accent, not Indian American, Indian the other one, says, hello, can you hear me? We are having trouble with our headset. Can you hear me? And I know that it's a telemarketing call which is trying to scam me, and I hang up immediately. Well, do you know, I didn't go right back to sleep because it infuriated me. It infuriated me. This has got to stop. This has got to stop. If the so-called president can do anything, and I'm pretty sure he can't, but if he can do anything, he has got to put a stop to the telemarketer calls. If he had run on that platform alone, I may have even voted for him if he shut up about all the other stuff. And if he were a decent human being, not a bully, not a moron, not a complete total asshole, but if he said that he would stop telemarketing calls, I would have voted for him. Hands down. Hands down. That's how much they bother me. Man, I don't know, kids. I just don't know anymore. Life is throwing me a lot of bones, but it's like I don't have any teeth to chew them with. It's a kick in the head.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat?
Hey, come on. That's not necessary. Put it down. That's better. Now put your hands behind your back. Very good. I'm going to take you downtown. Yeah, I do this every single weekday. The podcast world is fantastic because you can listen to it at any time. It's not like, oh my God, I missed the show. Oh my God, how can I live? It's always there. As a matter of fact, we have over 500 of these episodes all on the Podbean library. Go to podbean.com, Ron Van Dam Show. You'll find them all. All of them. You can binge listen until you die. And that will be the end result, I guarantee. Or you can go to newenglandbroadcasting.com, find us there. Or you can go to iTunes, find us there. TuneIn Radio, find us there. As well as many syndicated radio stations throughout the country. Who sometimes take us and sometimes don't. You take the clean versions, usually. The other ones, not so much. Please go to our Facebook page, New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. That's New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. And I don't know what you're supposed to do there, to be honest with you. I haven't looked at it, like, for months. But I'm supposed to tell you about it. Want to contact me? You want to be a guest on the show? You want to offer me tons of money to do things? It's ronvandamshow@gmail.com. ronvandamshow@gmail.com. I'll be happy to take your comments. I will not respond to them necessarily, but I'll respond to the nice ones. Or if you've written a book, something interesting you want to talk about, or a subject matter that you'd like me to discuss, can do it all there on the email system of America. For very small money, I bought Hillary Clinton's old server. Works really well, I think. And ronvandamshow@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. Hey, we have a very interesting interview on today's show. Fred Kressbach is going to join us. He is a Vietnam War veteran. What a insanely horrible deal that was. Oh my God, putting our soldiers in the swamps and the climate of the Viet Cong. Oh my God, awful. He's written a book. He finally wanted to expose what soldiers really go through, the traumas, how it really, in many cases, can just ruin their lives. As soon as they get out of the service, it's just like they're done. They're done. And he's being very honest about it. His book is called OKOK, Holy S-H-I-T, and it's about his situation as a Vietnam War vet, and it's going to lead into some interesting conversation, I guarantee you. As we always say, thank you for your service to veterans. That's probably not enough in order to get their lives back on track. And after what they go through, how is your mind ever going to cope again? It's a horrible, horrible thing. We don't talk about it enough, how horrible war is, how all-consumingly horrible the entire concept of it is, the death, the destruction, the psychological destruction of a human being, what soldiers go through. being torn down by the military and then propped up their way and sent into areas where your life is in danger every second that you take a breath for years. It's just amazing. And when they come back from this incredibly horrific experience that no human being should really ever have to go through, what support do we give them? What is left in their lives after that? What is the remaining factor of their brains after what they've seen and what they've experienced, living in constant survival mode, even when you're out of the war? It's a horrible thing. And I respect our military leaders, because you got to do stuff like that because the world is a very dangerous place. But I don't know if they understand that you're taking human beings and you're mangling them in every way, shape, and form. And soldiers are very proud people. They're tough. They're resilient. They're disciplined. But inside is a human being that has been shattered. It's very, very interesting stuff. Fred Kretzbach joins us now. He's the author of a book called Okay, Holy, I guess I can say Shit, Vietnam, which is the title of the book, although on the book it's carefully, a little bit more carefully written on that S word, but that's what it is. So I guess the book doesn't fool around here. You are a veteran of the Vietnam War, I understand. And
Yes.
And you have written this book to kind of shed light on exactly what life is like when you undergo a situation like this. There's a startling data that you quote here in your press release about how many veterans actually commit suicide upon their return. And I found that astounding.
Yeah, it's... I kind of wrote the book to a little bit of, I think more so now with the guys coming back from the Iraq veterans. And so just want to try and do something in my part to give support to these guys and talk a little bit about them. Yeah. So.
Have you, you've had discussions with many of them, I assume.
Yes.
Was your experience different than their experience, or is it really all the same?
It was very much different.
Yeah.
Very much different. I went over, and the people of the country was involved, heavily involved in the Vietnam War. And the veteran now, I kind of it's kind of a harsh term to use, I guess, to some extent. They're kind of the throwaway veterans. There's so few of them, and they it's not as widespread, but I think it's tougher for them, the guys who have one over there.
Has there been progress on the part of the VA hospitals and the government support groups, etc.? Is it more palatable now for our veterans today as opposed to Vietnam veterans, which was a considerable amount of time ago?
Yeah, it is. It is. I don't know if it's a lot better. We have a lot of programs that are available, and I have to say up front, they're great. The VA is great.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's tough. It's tough reaching out to the veterans that we have now, and for them to respond back and they carry the load themselves, and it's hard for them, the initiative to get in contact with the VA, and so it's a different situation.
Yeah.
They deal a lot with it by themselves, and that's not a good thing.
I understand. What is the message that's put forth in the book, the overriding concern and theme of the book?
Well, a lot of it is I tried to write the book not so much looking in, but try it looking back to fill in some of the holes, and for the but really thank you for what they did and want to know more about or care about. But a lot of people they look at they kind of isolate the veteran, you know, and they don't really want to know. But a lot of the vets carry quite a load out there, and I guess that's where I'm trying to get it. Call to action, you know, to get the book, make a connection with family, give something back.
What is actually needed for a returning soldier to what is needed for that person to make to get into a normal life? Is it job opportunities? Is it family? Or is that almost insurmountable because of the trauma and the things that you've seen and been through already?
We're going into some territory here that I tell you what I would this don't know if this would work or not.
Yeah, go on.
But I'd almost have to I'd say that I almost think we should have some sort of everybody who's at the age of 18 should have some mandatory service. And they should and everybody should go through some sort of training and stuff.
Right.
And I would bring these guys back in at their pace, just to be involved a little bit as far as jobs, as far as us being, we care about them, and they're not a throwaway.
Right.
And I think getting them involved would be easier. The transition would be easier. And then have them for job opportunities. Not that we forgot them.
Right.
Not that we forgot them. We didn't throw them away.
Right. And that might be an overriding feeling from returning soldiers, that they might feel like they're a throwaway when they return, because they've already expended what their purpose was.
Well, it's you know, and you kind of have that. It's different from Vietnam. The guys that come home back, I think, are different. There are so many people that were involved in that Vietnam War, and they had, and even from a protest standpoint. But now the guy. It's kind of the guy comes home and and they say, "Well, thank you for your service," and they kind of walk away.
Yeah,
and the guy is kind of standing there looking back at him, and he said, "Wow, I just got thrown to the curb."
Really? You okay, know? So that's that can be the reaction. I see. Yeah. So in other words, so the thank you words are. Are there words until you put into action? Then show me that you're thankful. I get it. You don't regret what you did, I assume, in service. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. That's a tough question. I don't necessarily regret. I went over. I mean, I did what I was asked to do.
Right.
But I'll tell you, when I was there, I didn't take but a half a day to figure out that we were not going to win this war.
Yeah.
And then my all of us that were there just kind of turned into a survival.
Yeah, I get it.
We just wanted to survive and get out. Yeah. And you can't call a cab and say, "Get me the hell out of here."
No, apparently not. Apparently you can't. And it went on far too long on top of that. Yeah. Okay. Had you gone through any type of therapy or program when you did return?
No. I never really got involved. Just the latter years. And that was just actually just from, I lost a lot of my hearing over there, and then that's going true. Through the local clinic, said, hey, you know, there's programs through the VA, I'll help you to go to the VA. And that's how it all got started. And that's just within the last 10 years that I really got into it. And then I got in with, you know, with all kinds of veterans, and to talk to. So I actually learned a lot just the last 10 years. Yeah. And then people encouraged me, said, you know, you need maybe to get off your duff and write a story.
Yeah.
The way that you're explaining it to us. And I don't have anything no axe to grind or anything like that. I just pretty much tell it like it was and how we came home.
It must be quite gratifying for yourself to put this into words and then to have other people share your thoughts through writing. I mean, that's and it's a great book too, by the way. You did a great job. Yes, so if you found a niche here, and I hope you write more, but that must be very rewarding in itself to be able to communicate this. Yeah,
it is. It kind of set me back a little bit, and but it really had. They said, you know, I just hear this from a lot of people, and they says, you know, my God, a book that finally nailed it, and So without all the macho BS or something like that, you know, but I give it, it's pretty straight, so I'm taken back by it.
That's great. Now, how long has the book been out?
Good question. I think it came out in November, I think, officially came out just this November.
Great.
And December, I think, hit the shelves. It's Barnes & Noble. Yeah. You get it online. This is the...
Great. Would veterans be feel more comfortable reading this book? I know the public would get more of an insight as to what one actually goes through in these circumstances. Do veterans also find some solace in this?
Yes, they do. Yes, they really do.
Good.
I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that and it's an interesting thing that I found was a lot of the guys that I ran, they said, man, he said, you wrote this book, he said, and you wrote it about yourself, kind of looking back outwards, you know. He said, you wrote the book about me.
Yeah.
And I said, really? He said, man, he said, you nailed it. You nailed it for me.
That's
he said, I can give this, and that's kind of what I hear. They said, I give it to, one guy said, I gave it to my wife, and she read it. And I said, this is about me. The guy said, and the wife said, talked around the breakfast table for over 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, you served your country when you were over there, and you've served again, apparently, by writing the book. So double for you. Good. Okay, now, where can we get the book? The title of the book, again, is Okay, Holy, and then there's that word I said before, Vietnam.
Yeah.
I assume it's Amazon for sure, right?
Amazon, Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Great.
You get it online, and it's available through there.
So. Wonderful. A pleasure and an honor speaking to you. You sound great, and thank you so much for your time with me.
Okay, so I appreciate talking with you this morning.
Okay, you take care now.
So, okay. Yeah, you have a good day.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was pretty heavy. Pick up the book. Really interesting book.
When I die and the limits are raised, gonna go to the place that's the best. Up to the spirit in the sky.
We'll be back right after these commercial words.
Let others say that water is just water.
Aquamira.
Each bottle of Aquamira, all-natural, artisanal, gourmet lifestyle water, Aquamira, contains only the finest hand-selected waters, gently and sustainably culled from free-range, certified glacial streams in fair trade countries.
Aquamira.
Skillfully aged in stainless steel, cruelty-free tanks, and quintuple filtered according to age-old Nepalese watersmithing techniques.
Aquamira.
Each non-GMO serving of Aquamira all-natural artisanal gourmet lifestyle water is allergen-free, safe for use on pets, and contains zero trans fats.
Aquamira.
Yes, let others say that water is just water. For the true discerning connoisseur, there is only one. There is only
Aquamira.
Find Aquamira water in handy 42 packs in the beverage section of your local convenience store, liquor store, or gas station. Free bottle with every purchase of a Take This Job and Shove It lottery scratch-off ticket while supplies last. Aquamira all-natural gourmet lifestyle water is bottled by the overarching beverage conglomeration corporation, LLC.
Listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
It could happen, I suppose. Bep, 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 bep. Do you know what's a real indication of the downfall of our society? Emojis. Yeah. Remember the day when that used to be exclusive to waitresses and restaurants? When you got your check, the woman would put a smiley face on your check with her name on it, hoping to get a large tip because she's engaging you. She's giving you the fantasy that perhaps, after the meal, we'll find a room somewhere, have wild, unbridled sex, no bridles. But you must tip me first, large amounts of money. It never happens, but the emoji was that. It was the smiley face. It was the tease at the bottom of a check. Now, this is like smiley faces on steroids. It's become a fabric of our society. What the hell happened? They're everywhere. It's at the end of every text message, every email, every communication. There's a face with a circle around it, showing your emotions in a simplistic, moronic cartoon style. The sticking out of the tongue on an emoji, the sad face with the tears coming out of the eyes with the extra long eyelashes, the extreme happy face, the excited face, the surprised face, all letting people know how we feel with a simplistic cartoon. And now, there are emoji movies, emoji lunch boxes, emoji toys, emoji puzzles, emoji, 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 emoji. What happened to us? Did we go backwards in our evolutionary scale? Are we becoming more childlike every day? Well, I guess we have. We elected a president who is no more than a child in a schoolyard. Perhaps we're trying to find our innocence. No. We're just acting like a bunch of idiots. That's all. Thank you. Sometimes life doesn't make sense. If you just stop every once in a while and just take a look at what's around you and observe carefully, you'll stand there with your mouth open in wonderment, just like the mouth open wonderment emoji. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. Join me for the next show. Will you do that, please? What do you mean, no? Yeah, you will. Please. Please join me for the next... Look, sad emoji. Sad emoji. Won't you join me for the next show? Sad emoji. You will? Oh, happy emoji. Happy emoji now.